Looking for new ways to send money transfers to your Chinese suppliers? Then welcome to Global from Asia number 116. Let's go.
Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
It's a bit quieter today for my usual intro recording time. My son Miles has gone up to my wife's hometown for about 10 days in Shenyang, which is near Beijing, with his grandpa. So he's doing some paperwork and other admin stuff, and the house is pretty quiet except for the occasional crying from Maggie. Also, as always, I'm always enjoying talking to listeners, and I just like to say I can always tell the difference between a podcast listener and someone who just searched Google and found the contact form. You guys are always just really great learners and so much more knowledgeable and have better questions and insights than the random Googler. So keep up the learning, guys. And now for this week's show, we're up to number 116. So as always, the show notes can be found at globalfromasia.com/episode116 to get the links and all the different stuff we're talking about. And we have Richard Bensberg, the CEO of Remitzy, and he's sharing about cross-border payments for business between China and the rest of the world. He had a great interview, shares tons of value. And afterwards, we were talking about the cross-border summit and getting him over to be a speaker, which he's glad to do. And even cooler news is he's going to be sponsoring the company. Remitzy is sponsoring the cross-border summit on April 16th. And they're going to have some proper coffee in the morning and other goodies for attendees. So thank you, Richard, and the whole Remitzy team for the support for the show here and the summit. I really appreciate it. And then after the show, I'm going to explain a little bit of nitty-gritty using the Remitzy system. I tried it out, and we'll also read off another iTunes review. So stay tuned after the interview. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another Global from Asia show. We have with us payments expert here for cross-border, Richard Bensberg from Remitzy. Thank you for coming on the show, I'm glad to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sure. So, of course, the standard, you know, how'd you get into this kind of interesting, Forex and payments types business?
Well, yeah, it's been a long road, I guess. So I came to China in 2001 originally. At that time, I was studying. I kind of got bitten by the China bug, shall we say,
yeah.
And always had the goal to get back here afterwards. But how I did that, I actually ended up after sort of studying a bit of Chinese, doing risk management consultancy, got into a lot of due diligence. So I understand a lot of problems around kind of manufacturing and dealing with factories and even dealing with factories that didn't exist sometimes. So from due diligence, I actually got more into the side of things that we're doing that to do with software solutions to help with due diligence. And then that took me on to compliance, which was a very kind of hot topic at the time. And so I was running a company back in the UK, helping tier one financials check their customer base for anybody who could be on a blacklist for sanctions violations or terrorism or all of these kind of things that banks have to consider whilst opening accounts and whilst doing payments. So it's not a case that you can just make a payment from one person to another. If you have that money, you have to be approved by a bank. They have to make sure that they have some sense of what you're doing with that transaction, why you're doing that transaction, who that transaction is going to. And a lot of this came in with the Patriot Act in the US and all of the ramifications from that. So that was kind of compliance. And then my interest sort of moved more in towards that payment sphere. And at the time, back in 2011, I came to know about blockchain. I don't know whether that's a topic that comes up a lot within your listenership, but it's getting quite a hot topic in the sort of financial circles right now. So I actually joined. After studying about blockchain for as much as I could on my own whilst running this company in the UK, I decided that I needed to jump right in to really understand how this could benefit international finance, trade finance. In the future, because I saw a real need for something like the blockchain. So I jumped in. I moved back to China. I joined the largest Bitcoin exchange in the world, And I did a year there just learning everything I could about this new technology.
Awesome.
Yeah. And that led me really to get into the, to do what I really wanted to do, which was this cross-border payments, which is what I've just set up last year when I co-founded Remitzy. And we're using this blockchain to make payments from buyers to suppliers based in China.
Cool. Yeah, very interesting. I didn't know until now the compliance thing with the banking earlier. I mean, that's a huge pain point right now for lots of listeners is banking. And I don't want to just pick on Hong Kong, but, you know, Hong Kong is known as like, you know, a financial center. So, you know, a lot of our listeners, especially, you know, I've been kind of preaching it too, is the, you know, setting up companies and bank accounts, but it's getting a little bit more strict with more than ever, I think, the last year or two. You know, so of course it's called a KYC, right? Know your customer and anti-money laundering and all those scary keywords. And
absolutely. And I think it's got slightly better in Hong Kong now. Yeah, I think a year ago, maybe even 6 months ago,
yeah.
banks just weren't opening accounts
yeah.
for anybody. And I mean, they have to be aware of the risk that any transactions that are going through their bank accounts are transactions which they can get pulled up by their regulator.
Sure.
and asked about. And if they can't give a good explanation about the nature of the transaction, then that's potentially going to cause them issues. Whether or not the banks have taken a risk-based approach now that it's worth getting fined a little bit to take in a bit more money,
yeah.
or whether it's a case that they've made their sort of processes better,
yeah.
then that's a question for the banks. But certainly, it's getting better, but it's something that China, I think, are going to be focused more and more on in the future as well. The kind of nature of the transactions up to date has mainly been kind of led by the US. And so that's where you find a lot of sort of jurisdictions such as Pakistan, Indonesia, Brazil, places like this, when they're trying to do trade with China, they struggle tremendously just because all of these payments are going through US correspondent banks. And the US banks basically have to take a responsibility for these transactions. And these are transactions that are happening in markets that they're not necessarily familiar with. And so they will quite often refuse to process the transaction just based on their risk assessment.
Cool. I don't know. I guess I'm getting fascinated by this stuff too, even though it's a big headache, but I guess that means an opportunity. So yeah, I think just a little bit about the numbers, the market. Of course, a lot of our listeners are these, I guess, maybe what we call digital nomads or location independent entrepreneurs, you know, running their e-commerce or import-export company from their laptop and a coffee shop. So, of course, this probably didn't even exist. Maybe Tim Ferriss and others kind of maybe inspired a lot of people, and now it's everywhere. So do you have any idea of the numbers? So a lot of global payments and cross-border payments, you know, I would imagine since the 2000s is it's got to be getting better. It might be bigger. It's got to be growing like crazy, right? I mean, do you have any numbers to share or stats?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is the payments market is huge globally, but it's really sort of split between the consumer payment side of things and the business payments. The consumer payments have been growing completely crazy. So we're talking about sort of innovators coming in the with fintech products. So you've got your Alipays, you've got your TenPays, you've got sort of 8 billion people, 8 billion red envelopes being sent out over.
Yeah.
You've got, apparently there was 180 million people shaking their phones during the Spring Festival gala trying to trying these red envelopes, including people in Western Sahara and all over the world. So it's in the consumer space, it's really crazy. It's growing like mad. But there's a reason why they're doing this. Obviously, they know that there's money to be made from payments. So in their sort of financial statements, both Alibaba and Tencent have been saying that they're accumulating significant bank fees in allowing people to move this money around between each other via their WeChat accounts and Alipay accounts. And now we're just sort of starting to see them trying to monetize this. So I think it was just last week that WeChat announced that they're going to charge for transfers to bank accounts
of
0.1%. So that's a start. That's a kind of indication of the direction it's going. And similarly, Apple Pay, I think, launched 2 days ago.
Exactly. A couple of days ago.
So that's another one that's really focused on that consumer space. And although they've got some initial kind of implementation problems with Chinese bank cards not necessarily working, that's a huge potential market. And all of these guys kind of see that. But what's really interesting is that sort of in the US anyway, sort of 74 out of 78 trillion non-cash payments are all business to business. So that consumer space is tiny compared with the business market. But the business market is something that just nobody seems to have paid any real attention to. So if you're making a payment as a business, you're still transacting using these sort of legacy systems that have existed for years and years. So if you're making an international transfer, that's going through the SWIFT network, which was that was built in 1973, I think it was. So that was before the internet, basically. And so you've just have got this really kind of big disparity between these consumer payments and these business payments. Business-to-business cross-border payments represents around 20% of global payment flows. So that's a significant amount. We're talking $155 trillion in 2014. There hasn't been a lot of innovation to date, but we see that changing. I think a lot of businesses generally are moving towards a more sort of user-friendly model. And so you have a sort of messaging apps such as Slack, which sort of take a consumer approach to a business problem. And we think payments is going to go that way as well. So we don't see any reason why payments needs to be so user-unfriendly, why you have to use these awful bank interfaces with pop-ups everywhere. And if you're in business banking in China, you're using USBs, which you're having to put into the computer using Internet Explorer. I mean, it's all really quite old school. And we think that's going to change. It's a huge market. It's just a market that's been overlooked because people just accept that this is the way it is, and they haven't been looking for change. But I think that's changing now.
Yeah, it just makes me laugh because my wife helps me out sometimes with China payments, and we have to have this like IBM like ThinkPad from like the 2000s with IE like 6 to like use the online banking and with a USB key. It's like unbelievable. Like just for the online banking, we have to keep these old computers and like insecure like browsers and stuff.
And when you think how revolutionary China has been in terms of the consumer payments market with Alipay, with WeChat, it's just seems crazy that the business side of things hasn't caught up. So it's definitely coming, and it's just a case of businesses now have the opportunity to look at different products and different ways of moving their money around the world rather than just relying on these legacy systems.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, it's cool you're focusing really on this into China payments. I think a lot of our listeners know, and you and I know, China is China, right? And it's always a little bit special kind of place. So, of course, there's the renminbi. And I'm curious, too, like, you know, your technology or your little bit inside under the hood of the process of inbound payments. Because, you know, maybe we first kind of discuss the restrictions of the renminbi or the Chinese yuan, a little bit of history of the currency controls.
Absolutely. So, I mean, everybody sort of knows that getting money into China is difficult. The thing is, it really shouldn't be. If we're talking about making payments, this is something that all governments want to encourage. International trade is a big priority for governments, right? And since 2009 in China, the current account, i.e. the flow of money for goods and services, has been fully open. So there should be no restrictions here. You can buy renminbi anywhere in the world and use that for the settlement of invoices to China. Likewise, you can pay in US dollars or any other currency for that matter. The problem comes in that the fact that the capital account in China, so moving money out of the country, is tightly restricted. So whether it's for investment purposes or whether you're buying a house in America or whatever it may be, so that investment flow is restricted. There's reasons why. Countries where capital flows out of the country very quickly can have serious impact on their economy. So I think China is going through a stage of liberalization, and they've been very careful not to liberalize too quickly, causing them sort of problems to their domestic economy. So we can understand why why they're doing that. The problem comes where we're trying to do this international trade. It's on the current account. It should be fully liberalized. The problem is there's so many ways to scam the system, I guess, that they've had to be more careful about current account transactions as well to make sure they're not current account transactions, as capital account transactions hidden as current account transactions. So I think a good example was a Bloomberg article came out a few days ago. Imports to China from Hong Kong in the last month or couple of months have risen by 100-something%. Now, I think we all know that that's not true. They haven't risen 100-something%. So why has that number gone up? It's clearly that people are using sort of false invoicing to invoice a Chinese company so that the Chinese company can pay out to Hong Kong, which is a way of getting your money out of China. So this is a way of avoiding the capital controls using that the liberalized current account. So I think this is something that the government is going to get a lot more strict about. They're going to liberalize slowly, but they don't want people scamming the system up until that point. So I think that's where the kind of disconnect comes in and why it is difficult to move money in and out of China. Now, how we're addressing that problem, we're moving in one direction only. So we're only taking funds into China. That there's the big risk of moving funds out of China is that you could be involved in some kind of money laundering scheme. Yeah. People are trying to avoid those capital controls. The way that we do it is by, as I mentioned earlier, using the blockchain. So this kind of new technology, which is essentially a global ledger and allows businesses and individuals to digitalize their assets so that they're tradable globally. So in cross-border payments, which we think is like the first killer app for the blockchain, our remittances platform essentially digitizes the assets of the company, be it in the UK, be it in Hong Kong, be it in Germany, putting it on the blockchain and allowing us to take that value essentially into China and back into the local currency in the target market. So by doing this, the only cross-border elements of how we make a payment is a digital cross-border, and that digital cross-border is instant. The blockchain is the same in all places at all times. So as soon as I digitize an asset in the UK by putting pounds in an account somewhere, then that's immediately available to me in China in renminbi. I just need to reverse that process. So essentially, that means that no money is crossing these borders. Which means that we're not subject to the same kind of controls that are necessary when money's moving across borders. So whilst we, as a business, we look at what the payment is being used for, we look at the invoice to make sure that it is a genuine transaction. But at the same time, system that we use to move money around the world means that we can do a payment in as little as 6 hours. Rather than going through the traditional system, which takes 3 to 5 days with a lot of paperwork at both ends.
Got it. Interesting. Definitely. Yeah, because of course there's always, I think maybe we can talk a little bit about the current way to send money into China. Just so I'm sure some listeners have had this headache. Maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but from my experience, or I've received money in a Chinese company bank account, especially, well, there's also differences with business and personal accounts in China. Maybe we can talk about that. But for business accounts, they need to see the invoice and then you need to pay the tax up front for the money coming in with like the VAT. And then there's a currency conversion because usually it comes in, I guess you said RMB could be sent in, but a lot of times Westerners either don't know or can't do that. And usually it's like a US dollar transaction has to be converted in and at the bank and then unlocked to your account, which is a pretty painful process. And sometimes you have full-time staff in China on the Chinese receiver side to go to the bank and receive it. So that's pretty painful.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And this is the problem that we see and that we deal with every day. One of the issues there, I think that you mentioned, is that you have the sort of staff in China who are focused on doing this every day, and this is all they do every day. And some of the reason why things haven't changed, some of the reasons why we're still using the USD is the fact that this is what people are comfortable with. This is they know the process. This is they receive the money, they go here, they sign this piece of paper in triplicate with the company stamp, they take it to this department. It's a very long-winded process, but it's one that I guess Chinese manufacturers have departments which are comfortable with. The thing is, though, that just because it's the way that it's historically been done does not mean that it's the best way to do it. And there's a lot that you should always be asking your supplier, what are the payment options available? Do I get a discount if I pay in renminbi? Is there another option apart from US dollars? There's no reason why US dollars has to be this global sort of default mm-hmm. trade currency. If you and not receiving US dollars from your customers, then essentially you're having to convert pounds or Swiss francs or euros or whatever it may be twice. And each time you do that trade, you're getting hit by bank fees. Mm-hmm. Because the banks, essentially the way that it works, if you're doing a transaction, using an example of saying from euros to China, if you do it in the current process where you're using US dollars as a means to get it to the supplier in a way that they wish to receive it, you're having to change that at your bank. They're charging you probably 2% over the mid-market rate. So the mid-market rate is the rate that banks charge each other on the Forex markets. And so when they're dealing with the settlement between the banks, they use this mid-market rate, which obviously changes throughout the day as the trade develops and mm-hmm. As the currency weakens or strengthens. But when you, as a business user, you log on to your internet banking overseas, then you're not given this mid-market rate. You don't know what the mid-market mm-hmm. rate is. You click a button and the bank tells you how much US dollars it's going to give you or how much euros you need to give them in order to get the US dollar you want. And there's absolutely no transparency at all. They may give you a rate which they'll give you for sort of 10 seconds and you have to make a decision and either like it or lump it. And it's just there's no transparency. So we think that there's a lot that can be improved in this process. So first of all, transparency around the bank fees. You get hit by the exchange rate twice if you're changing from euros to US dollars and then US dollars to renminbi. There's bank fees at at your end when you're making the payment, and there's bank fees at the supplier's end when they're receiving the payment. Now, if you're if you're doing business with China, you may think, oh, the foreign exchange rate at their end doesn't matter. I don't have to pay that. The bank fees at their end doesn't matter. That's their cost of business. So I'm not going to care about that. But essentially, these are all being factored into the price. So you need, as a buyer, to care about your supplier's costs as well. Because if you can get your supplier's costs down, then you can get your own costs down.
Yeah.
If you're not paying in a local currency, then the cost of them getting that money into the local currency is being factored into your bill. There's no doubt about it.
Definitely.
And what's worse, HSBC did a survey, I think, a couple of years back now. And in my experience, this is pretty accurate. It's that companies in China typically just whop on 5% as a very rough currency hedge when they're quoting in US dollars. So if you ask for a renminbi price, it's quite likely that you can immediately save yourself 5%.
True. Yeah, like actually we got connected from Renault at qualityinspection.org. So shout out to Renault. Always appreciate him. And yeah, in the article there, you posted that as well. And I know some listeners too have tried to send RMB to factories, and a lot of times the factories don't want it because they, like you mentioned, they have their little margins on top at USD to pad money. And there's also, you know, been for once the RMB is going in a direction to make it cheaper in China for a while. And a lot of times these factories are trying to not pass on that savings to the buyers. So using US dollars is a lot of times, like you said, is an advantage to the supplier in China or the factory in China because they can squeeze more profit.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously, as a buyer, you have to be aware of all of the different sort of tricks of the trade. And I'm sure your listeners are a lot more astute on those than I am. But on the payment side of things, that's definitely one of them. If they're quoting you in US dollars, there's absolutely no doubt that they're hedging the risk because their costs are essentially mostly going to be in renminbi. The other factor which comes across if somebody is resistant to paying, to accepting payments in renminbi, is the fact that the finance department, as I mentioned, they'll have their ways of doing things that they've done for years and years. Renminbi settlement only became an option in 2009. I think it was also on his blog that I read that Tesco pay all of their suppliers in renminbi. There's obviously a reason why they do that, that they realize that by paying in renminbi, they can get the cost down. But it is a kind of process that you have to go through with your supplier when you're kind of negotiating these rates. The other thing is that these departments may not realize that there's tax rebates that they apply for when they're exporting goods. And in order to get those tax rebates, there's certain documentation that you have to provide to local government. Now, one of those pieces of documentation is regarding the payment. And just because they haven't traditionally done it in the past, because it hasn't been available prior to 2009, the only way that they know how to do these quite often is when the money comes in via US dollars. But in actual fact, that doesn't matter. You can do that tax rebate regardless of what the currency the money comes in via. So long as you're exporting the goods, that tax rebate is still available. So there's two things basically. There's firstly, as a buyer, kind of understanding the ways that that the supplier is making money, understanding the supplier's costs as well, and working together with that supplier to try and reduce that to your benefit. And the second is obviously education and making sure the supplier kind of understands that all these different methods of making payments are now open to the market. It doesn't have to be done in the way that it was done prior to 2009. It doesn't have to be done using the SWIFT banking network that was built in 1973. Cool. There's different ways to make these payments. And yeah. The more that people look into it, I think the more options are available. In the consumer market, going back to consumer, again, I think in the UK where I'm from, people will happily shop around to save themselves 1 or 2 or 3% on their bank fees or on their insurance, on their energy bills. There's whole websites dedicated to sort of saving these few percentage points. And in business, payments is a real cost of business that can affect people's bottom line. And it's time people started shopping around.
True, true. So very, very great information. Thanks, Richard. So I'm going into maybe a little small pet peeve of mine. I think busted a blood vessel in my neck when I was first in China in 2008. I was sending a pretty big payment from the US to my company in China, and it was a big nightmare because of the naming. So I don't know, maybe it's gotten better, but usually these company names are so long. And even from, you know, HSBC in Hong Kong, like the text box isn't big enough in a lot of these online forms. So I kind of abbreviated certain parts of the name, because in China, I think, of course, you know, like it's like, you know, Shandong Super Mechanic Import Export Company .com Limited. You know, like it's so long. So are you, I guess you guys have a solution for that. Is there, you know, or maybe, I don't know, just play with me here on this pet peeve of mine, or is there anything you can say on this?
You're absolutely right to have that as a pet peeve. That's a huge problem. And these payments, as I was talking about earlier, there's various different reasons why they may not go through. So again, you've got the sort of compliance aspect with the banks not being able to deal with the risk involved in the payment because they don't really understand the companies doing the trades. But then you've got really simple things, which are again down to just systems being developed a long, long time ago and not having been updated. So the fact that name issue, there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to type Chinese into these systems, or text box shouldn't be long enough. But that's what it is. It's an old system that has set up these rules that maybe you can't put a bracket in the system because the bracket doesn't exist on the coding that they're using on the back end of their banking network or whatever it may be. I think the company name is a really interesting one, because which bits of the name do you translate into English? Which bits do you leave?
Yeah.
Which bits of pinyin do you connect together? Is Shandong one word or Shandong two words?
Yeah.
There's always and the brackets issue and the different brackets in English brackets and Chinese brackets can cause all kinds of problems. And I think it is just a case that these systems were built too long ago and they're just not up to the job. The thing is, the Chinese domestic banking system just works fine when it comes to these payments, because the Chinese company can have one name and one name only. The name at the Administration of Industry and Commerce, the AIC, is the company name. That's the company name that's going to be on the bank accounts, and it's in Chinese and you know what it is. So because we skip the international payments network, we're just using the domestic network in the countries that we're dealing with. We're using the blockchain as the bridge between those countries. That means we use the local networks, and the local networks work generally okay. So in China, we make a payment. The time from leaving our bank account to going into the other account is 2 hours. If there is any problems with the name, which there virtually never is because we're writing the name in Chinese according to how it looks with the Administration of Industry and Commerce, then we immediately know that the payment has failed. The big thing about the international transfers is that even when this goes wrong, when the name causes a problem, you don't know about it until you find out for yourself. So you get a case where you're calling up the supplier on a daily basis. Has the money arrived? Has the money arrived? Mm-hmm. And they tell you no. And if you're a global nomad, you may not be in the same place as this factory. You may not have even visited the factory before. Do you know whether they're telling the truth? Have they just absconded with your money? Or is it actually a payment problem? And so what tends to happen is, you wait another day. Okay, has it arrived? No, it still hasn't arrived. Okay, we'll wait one more day. And you just keep on waiting. And then the weekend comes or whatever it may be. And just this delay. And often, if you're in manufacturing, then this is crucial. Well, if you're in the service sector as well, if you're hiring a lawyer, if you're whatever you're doing, this payment very typically has to arrive before any goods or services are produced. Mm-hmm. So you can have cases where production lines are just waiting because the payment hasn't arrived and it's got lost in the banking system. And the only thing you can do is give a call to your bank and ask them to initiate a trace. Them doing that just means that they will send a message to the recipient bank. Eventually, they'll figure out where it's got lost in the system. They'll send the money back to you and you'll have to send the money again. Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of fees, different fees and stuff. Yep.
Yeah, it can take weeks. And if you're doing business, this is a huge cost of business as well. Forget about all I've been talking about, how much you're getting ripped off in Forex rates and hedging and all of this kind of thing. If you miss your production dates, if you miss your shipping dates, then that's potentially an even bigger cost. If you miss a shipment that you are delivering to a client in the US or something because your payment hasn't gone in, you can lose that customer. You can get sued. You can. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of that could happen. So it's a really big problem.
Yep. I remember, it's like for me, it was like an investment to my company. So it was like stock, and it was Chinese New Year was coming. And then I luckily, supposedly the bank said that they did this only like 3 times per year, but they allowed me to receive it. They made like an exception, which was amazing. I think I had to spend like an hour at the bank in China because they saw the payment in, but it was missing off like LTD because I couldn't fit it. So I just put, because it was like one of the first payments I had made. So I just cut off like the limited and then they wouldn't accept it. And I wanted to go, crazy because, I'm an entrepreneur. I was like, it was paint money I kind of needed and it was going to be stuck in the middle of nowhere between Chinese New Year. Between China and the US, so I wanted to go crazy.
Absolutely, I completely understand. But understand the pain, and I think it's something that companies come up with a lot. Anybody I speak to in manufacturing, payments issues is something that is always at the back of their mind. So anything that we can do to improve it is only beneficial to international trade. There's no reason why people shouldn't be able to do business just because the banking system is set at 35 characters and the banks don't recognize the difference between limited and LTD or whatever it may be.
Cool. Well, so thanks so much, Richard, for sharing. And we were talking a little bit. I think you can give a little, maybe hook up some of our listeners and have special offers for using trying out your service.
So thank you for giving me the heads up on this rather than
just trying things out, right, you know, just trying things out here.
I mean, having listened to the podcast and understanding a bit about your listenership, it's really good to sort of help these businesses out where we can. So what we've done is we've come up with an idea where by anybody who contacts us and lets us know that they've listened to the podcast and wanting to do a payment, then we'll process their first payment of up to €10,000 for completely free. So what does that mean for free? As I've talked before, we're talking about the bank's mid-market rates. So that's the rates that the banks are charging each other with their big Forex deals, which are billions of dollars at a time. That's the rate that Remitzy will give your users. Typically, we charge a small percentage on top of that. We'll take away our percentage up until the end of May for any listeners that reach out to us for that first payment.
Awesome. And forgot to ask, this is a fun question, but any speculations on RMB USD in the future?
it's one of those questions. So, we have a few economists on our team. Our product is designed to be agnostic to the future price, so it doesn't affect us. We're just making the payment. So whether the price goes up or down, that won't affect the ability to do payments. But obviously, you put two economists in a room and you get three opinions. So our team have varying views on this. I mean, the governor of the Central Bank of China, Zhou Xiaochuan, has said that there's no basis for a devaluation of the renminbi. But then obviously we had the event on August the 11th, I guess it was, where the renminbi was devalued 3% in one day, the biggest devaluation for years and years. The Big Mac index, if you want to believe that, tells us that the renminbi is undervalued. But I think one view that's gaining some traction is that the renminbi will probably stay stable with a basket of currencies, but may depreciate somewhat against the US dollar. I think something that people may not be aware of, because it doesn't get talked about so much in the media, is that the euro has actually depreciated more than the renminbi since 1st of January 2015 against the US dollar. So the euro's depreciated 8%, while the renminbi's only depreciated 6%. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of politics, obviously, behind the media and these announcements and all of this kind of stuff. So it's kind of hard to gauge. So I think as a somebody doing business, the best thing to be doing is just having that constant communication with your supplier, talking about what their costs are, talking about where they can save money by dealing in different currencies, by dealing in different payment methods. So I think wherever the currency goes, it's always good to sort of open up these conversations. And now there's even opportunities to hold renminbi offshore. So that is something that maybe people don't think about very much, but that's an option as well. I mean, the infrastructure isn't necessarily in place as much as it could be. The amounts of renminbi that are available and how easy it is to get your hands on it. But all of these things are things that are happening and things that are going to change as we go forward. So I think the key thing is sort of communication with suppliers and understanding what their costs are, and you can get better deals. So
cool. Great.
That's something to keep an eye out on.
All right. This is a great interview, Richard. And just as always, how can people reach out to you or your business? Of course, websites, social, anything you prefer.
Sure. So we're at www.remitzy.com. All of our contact details are there. You can reach us by phone, website, chat function, Twitter. We have a WeChat account. Remitzy is the username. There's humans behind everything we do. You're not going to be talking to machines. So if any of your users have any payment problems, we're just interested in understanding exactly what those pain points are. And we work with clients to come up with bespoke solutions, as well as what you can see on our website, which allows companies to book payments in a few clicks.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And that's a wrap.
Great. Thanks, Mike.
Okay. Thanks, Richard, and the whole Remitzy team. And you guys really got it going. Free gift for listeners. Their first payment is free on the house. So just send the customer service a note and you'll be comped. So thanks for that. And now I want to test out the system and share my experiences. I signed up and actually just recently they've added US dollar currency support. So there's sterling, euro, Chinese yuan, and dollars to choose from to send into China. And then you can choose to send a certain amount from or a certain amount that the receiver will receive. And then they will help make the adjustments. And I know a lot of listeners are Hong Kong business owners, as we talk a lot about that on the show. And Remitsy does have a Hong Kong bank account at Hon Song. So for me as an HSBC user, there's this inter-Hong Kong company transfer fee to banks of 55 Hong Kong dollars that HSBC does. But customer service is pretty awesome, and they reached out to me. And I think they'll reach out to anybody that signs up. They seem really, really on top of everything. But he told me that they will take care of that fee as part of their service charge. So you don't have to worry about that fee. And then once you get going to the next step, you got to upload your invoice, your supplier invoice, so that they verify it, that it's legitimate money transfer for business. And then voila. I'd love to hear how you guys are experienced using it, or if you have other ways you're sending money to and from China. We're always looking for different solutions. And then another pain point I'm always hearing about is merchant accounts. So I rank high in Google for Stripe Hong Kong, and we just got a randomly another comment from somebody probably searching online. And it's Stephen Leung on our blog post for the Stripe Hong Kong. And he says, it's March 2016 and still not listed on even private beta. Sad face. I have to implement payment this week. Braintree it is, I guess. Yeah, Stephen, I guess Braintree is still the one to probably go to in Hong Kong. So good luck with that. And if you're listening to the show, I'd love to hear how that went. And I've been kind of getting out of the house, being a little bit more networking and going to meetups and such. And I was at an ad hoc Shenzhen City Amazon FBA meetup last Saturday in Shekou. We went around the table with introductions of each other, and it was my turn to speak and share. And I don't know, I haven't really spoken in public for a while, and I was a little bit softer. And Chris Davey, who is actually a moderator of the WeChat group for the Amazon FBA, he does Canton Fair meetups. He was a guest on episode 114 even, and he was just joking to everybody that I'm used to speaking into a microphone and not in public. And I guess that's true, Chris. I just am kind of like sitting here in my quiet room and speaking into this microphone. So a lot more effective than trying to yell over 15 people or so at a dinner table. But okay, so I hope you guys like the last word ramblings. But to end off on a high note, we have another 5-star iTunes review. And I'd love to read these off, and I love your support. And if you guys enjoy the show, spending a little bit of time to do this helps out a lot, I'm told. So this review comes from the United Kingdom on February 12, 2016, 5-star, username TomTom1300. And he says, a must listen to if you are into e-commerce and sourcing from China. And then goes on to say, thank you for the show. I have been following it for almost a year and always get something out of it. Very useful and practical information that was not defined elsewhere. Also, the variety and caliber of people being interviewed ensure the topics are revisited, but always with a different angle. More of the same, please. All right, Tom. So glad you enjoy, and I'm glad you more of the same. I'll try to keep these going. It's got a lot more interviews already recorded for the next few weeks and getting more and more requests of people that want to be on the show. So if you also have ideas or suggestions for topics or people to interview, I'm always available to hear it. Mike at globalfromasia.com. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.